Blog Talk Radio.
Again, this is your host, Marlon Ranger, and of course, I got my man, Lou Maddox, coming in. My name is Marlon Ranger. This is the Sports Lounge, catching up with the episode, National Results, because that's what we were about, the results. A lot of activity this weekend on the Saturday, especially the NFL Draft, Kentucky Derby, and of course, that big fight that they had on late night got postponed. Just a bit, because it was so much pay-per-view going out of its mind, and a lot of people got frustrated because they didn't get the event and so forth, so on. Nevertheless, some of the predictions that were made. What's up, Lou?
Came out exactly as expected.
Yes, actually it did. And As we thought, the casual fan would be vastly disappointed in what the result was. And, of course, we are speaking of the Mayweather fight. And if you paid attention to what happened, you really would have realized that if you're not an actual boxing fan, you were not going to like this fight. And it was just pretty much what Mayweather has done over the course of his illustrious career, and that was play a nice defensive bout, defensive matchup, countered, moved out the way, was moving around, never actually stayed on the ropes for too long when he was in the ropes, threw accurate blows, punches that caught Pacquiao, didn't allow Pacquiao to get aggressive. And to some degree, we have to put this aspect of fault on Pacquiao. But this is the reality, Lou, because we said this early on, or I mentioned it as well, is that, you know, the idea is to get Mayweather to play out of his comfort zone, because we know what he does. He's a defensive fighter, and he's a defensive genius, and you have to be more aggressive, even if it exposes you to a certain degree, to get him to respond and react and change his game plan. But obviously, Pacquiao did not do that for a great portion of the fight, and by the time he realized what was going on, it was over. And I'm going to tell you, I really didn't watch the fight last night. I have a friend that watched the fight. He posted it on my Facebook, and I watched it this morning. And, you know, of course, I heard the result before I went to bed, and, you know, I was like, okay, let me take a look at it. I heard Evander Holyfield. Holyfield was like, after the match, was like, well, he thought it was a little bit wrong. He thought Pacquiao actually earned the fight and won. But I heard Bernard Hopkins was like, no, you know, Mayweather won it. And I heard Roy Jones Jr. basically said that, you know, Mayweather won the fight. So it's like, I want to see for myself to see what kind of how it went down. And I scored it very similar, you know, to, you know, Mayweather winning 8 out of the 12 rounds, possibly 7. I think he could have gave one of those rounds to Pacquiao. Pacquiao had the third round for me, the fifth and the sixth round, and then he had, I think, like around 8 and then around like number 11. And I think the rest of those rounds went to Mayweather. And he's just technical. He's a technical fighter. He forces you to come out of your comfort zone. You can't get comfortable jabbing him. And we can honestly say that this is really just his ability, or that of forcing other fighters to adjust to him, because he does this to everybody. Right? You know, this is not anything new if you've been watching Mayweather over the course of the past decade. He forces all his opponents to fight this style against him. And that's typically what happens, and that was the source of the situation, and it just turned out bad. And then, you know, and I ain't, when I say turned out bad, it was basically like I said, I was cheering for Pacquiao, but I just knew in the back of my mind that Mayweather would ultimately play this kind of fight or fight this kind of match, and it would cause this kind of result. Lou, I don't know. I sent you the fight to see if you kind of checked it out. Did you take a look at it? Did you just kind of look at the highlights and heard? And does anything surprise you?
Yeah, I checked out the fight, and it turned out he did exactly what I expected him to do. He played all defensively. Now, the thing that I didn't like about it is, yeah, Pacquiao pretty much just gave the fight away because he was just pretty much all in offense the whole fight. You know, you're not going to win the match like that, especially against someone who's being defensive and, you know, playing you into being all offensive, because all that's going to do is play. All that's going to do in playing to Mayweather's, you know, short jab game. And on top of that, you playing all defensive, you're going to start getting more fatigue as the fight draw out.
Yeah. I think he needed to play. I don't think he was offensive enough, in my opinion. I think when you look at, say, round three, that he was throwing a lot of punches. Even though he was missing, he was forcing, you know, Mayweather to respond to him being aggressive. You understand what I'm saying? I know eventually it's a dangerous thing. Could have got caught up like he did with Manuel. But he kind of just backed off. You know what I mean? Like in the later rounds where he needed to somewhat be a little bit more aggressive, force Mayweather to the rope, try to trap him in there and force him to box. And even if it would have been, you know, he would have caught a couple of blows or exposed himself to a certain degree, the only way you're going to beat him is if you force him to fight differently. And you can't fight a defensive fighter game. So that's all he did. He basically jab, countered, ran the clock out. Anytime Pacquiao would get any type of momentum, he would grab him, hold him, you know what I mean, slow him down. It just was not ideal for him. It didn't go well for Pacquiao, and I think he just kind of laid down. I absolutely just felt he laid down. And, you know, we hear a lot of talk now, you know, what does he rank amongst your top 10 of boxers? In my opinion, he's not in my top 10. He might be in my top 15. I'm just being honest, because it's like the other boxers, it's like they box. Like he's boxing, but it's almost like he's running in boxing. He's not really facing up to his opponent. He's really fighting a lot of his opponents in their prime when they're not no longer as good as they were. He didn't fight them at the peak of their success. I mean, you look at any of the greats, Ali, Tyson, even Holyfield. A lot of these fighters, Roy Jones Jr. and Hopkins, they fight their boxers and their matchups at the peak. You know, like when their competition is at the highest level, and they're like the number one contender. He doesn't do that. He waits and ducks and dodges and waits almost until they're basically irrelevant. And he's faced off against some boxers that have potential, but they're way early on before their actual peak. You know what I mean? Some of these guys are just before their peak. He fought Cotto out of his peak. He fought De La Hoya at the end of his peak. Sugar Shane Mosley at the end of his peak. Only one he faced that was somewhat, you know, around the side of Zab Judah, but Mayweather basically is, you know, he didn't really box. He just played strategic, and, you know, he strategized, he countered, he ran. And I believe it is Pacquiao's duty to step in there and force him to box. You got to trap him off. You got to cut him off. He kept trying to come at Floyd straight up. You know, Floyd has the height advantage. He just go ahead and stretch his arm out and keep a safe distance. And, you know, he would tag him every time he tried to do something different when he went head up with him. He should have pressed more or less to his right side because he's the southpaw. He could have turned him and possibly got a better result. But I don't know.
Overall, the whole fight, I was literally about to fall asleep. I mean, I haven't seen that much turtling since fighting against Guile in Street Fighter.
The block. You know, sometimes you're funny, and you know, I'm going to get into a little bit of video terminology or video game terminology. You know, when I'm playing Street Fighter, you know, how the computer basically is impossible to beat. They just do these impossible moves. I basically would do just like Floyd. Have nothing but blocks and just have cheap kicks in between, quick punches. They jump, get them in the air. As soon as they come close, get an uppercut, knock them out. You know, not knock them out, but knock them down, and generally run the clock out to where nobody knocks out. But I would win by decision because my energy level was higher than the computer, and that's all. Yeah. That's all basically Mayweather did. He basically just took the advantage, countered. Had some more accurate throws, threw punches, and he only threw, I think, average 40 punches or 40 thrown punches around. That's like the third worst in boxing history, I believe. So he's smart. He, for a person that can't read, he sure knows how to win and make more money. So obviously that's what he loves the most. I think he got, what, $100 million. That's what he's cashing. Gotta love it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you know, it's
$100 million free for a sparring match.
He got $100 million for basically avoiding contact. And that's what he did. And, hey, you know, that's his style. But, I mean, do we really going to consider that and put him in a class with these greats?
No, I don't think so.
No way, I wouldn't. I mean, for me, I know my top 10, and I would have Ali first, second, you know, I like Holyfield, but then I'd have to put Lennox Lewis above him because he beat him, even though it's at the tail end of his career. I love George Foreman. I like a lot of heavyweights. And then, of course, I go to middleweights. I like Roy Jones Jr. when he was fighting. Bernard Hopkins is fantastic. Go back to the heavyweights. You can look at even Larry Holmes. A lot of these fighters, man, Riddick Bowe. I feel those guys were better. They were better boxers. And, you know, Hagler and Hearns and those guys. And, of course, Sugar Ray Leonard. And I don't know if I had to sit there and rank them, Tyson. All those guys, when you put them in the mix, to me, all of them are better than Floyd. They're just better. They don't dodge. They box.
Yeah.
They get in their box. And they use their skill and their talent level and their understanding of the game, not on just straight defensive and cheap, you know, taps and dodges, you know, throughout a match. They box. So, you know, he's smart, and he fought wisely, and he won.
Yep.
I can't say he didn't cheat. He boxed. He took whatever Pacquiao gave him, and he just basically won. So Pacquiao just has to, you know, if he gets a rematch, he's going to have to rethink his strategy and make it work better than what he actually did, you know?
I don't think it's going to happen. That's going to be
Let me see. Rocky Marciano ended up his career at 49-0. Right now, Floyd is 48-0. I don't know who he's going to face off against next. I think he ought to give Manny a Pacquiao and go for that 50. But then again, when has he ever done what is actually beneficial for anybody else? So, you know, it's
a wrap. After whoever Floyd fights next, that's going to be the end of it, and then he's going to retire after that.
Yeah. like that, and you, it's trivial to me. You know, when you really look at,
I would have had. I tell you, I was almost literally falling asleep. I would have had more excitement watching a Guile mirror match where they're doing nothing but chucking sonic booms at each other.
Yeah, that's all it is. I mean, defensive, and we've played, and, you know, it's just that's all it did. You know, you just kind of do enough to win. You don't make much mistakes. I remember back in the day when I was playing, I was going back to when I was first playing Madden, and I had to level all the way up to the highest level on Madden, right? And I remember every time I played the first game, I would throw about an interception every three or four plays, and I found a play that worked, and I ended up losing that first game, right? So I said, now I know what I'm going to do, right? My defense was acting correctly. My offense, I couldn't score a touchdown, but I can get further enough to where I can kick field goals, right? So all I did I pitched the Falcons, and at that time the Falcons were playing, Mike Vick was playing for the Falcons. So I was fast enough for the defenders so they couldn't catch me, and I could run out of the pocket. And it was always a man that was in coverage that would try to come and tackle me, but then if he did try to come and tackle me, I would just pass right over his head, and it would always get me like 4 or 5 yards on either side when I ran the play. I just flipped the play. I would run to one side. If they stop it, I run it to the other side. And I always get to like the 9 or the 10 yard line, but it would get me a field goal. And Lou, I ran that play several times over, and I was kicking a field goal, 3-0. Hit the ball back, and what it was, their team was driving down, and they were out of force, a fourth down, and they was out of field goal range. So what I would do, me running those same plays was also burning the clock out, right? So I'm taking that same play, going down the field, and just going down the field. At the end of the half, the game was 6-0. They get the ball back. They score a touchdown at 7-6. I hurry up, get the ball back. Do the same thing. It gets me 9-7. I'm up. They go. They drive. They kick a field goal. 10-9. Right. It's the fourth quarter. 4 minutes left. You know, I run the same play for an entire game. I run the same play. I get all the way down. I get to the 13. I get to the middle of the field. I burn the clock all the way down, and I kick the field goal, and I won the game. And the thing was, listen, it wasn't beautiful. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't fantastic, but I won. I did exactly what I could do. Nothing I did knew was work. I didn't take any chances. I didn't try to lose a game, but I did a little bit to win the game. And that's all he did. He sat back. He tapped him a little bit to get a lead, and then that was it. And that's primarily what I say, you know.
Yeah, he had a strategy.
Yeah, you know, he made it work. And somehow, some way, Pacquiao was not aggressive enough. He was aggressive in a few rounds, and when he was throwing a bunch more punches, he was connecting on some of them, and then the judges, you had no choice because of the way Mayweather was playing to give the match, you know, right back to, you know, or give that round to Pacquiao. And, you know, it's funny because when Mayweather was going back to his father's corners, you know, his dad was basically saying, hey, you need to try to win this fight. Don't leave it in the hands of the judge. Why are you playing out to lose? And basically his father was chewing him out in the corner. You can hear it. But he won. He won. The strategy worked. And there'll be no debate. I just know at the end of the night, you know, when it comes tomorrow, I know Skip Bayless is going to probably feel like slitting his wrist because he had a tough weekend this weekend. He didn't have a great weekend at all. So, I mean, anything else you gather from that, Lou?
No, that's pretty much it. Like I said, everything panned out exactly how I figured it would be. I mean, Pacquiao, the only way Pacquiao would have won this is if it was, you know, he was being aggressive, but he was just being aggressive in just one particular way. It just didn't look like he really has any other type of strategy. You know, just go in one way and that was it. So, and the longer this fight draws out, the more it was going to be in Floyd's favor. And that's what happened, and we see what the end result was.
Yeah, it was just nothing else they could do.
Yeah.
I mean, he should have been somewhat So, Lou, I mean, I guess we can move on to the playoffs and some of this basketball. I mean, it's nothing really much we can say about the fight. If you're a boxing fan, I mean, you understood the technique, you see what was going on, and basically. We basically. I just got getting distracted here. basically, if you're a boxing fan and you like watching boxing, it was a match for you to watch. You can understand the strategicness in it. You understood what Mayweather was doing, and okay, it was great. But I mean, if you're a casual fan, it probably was boredom for you. And even if you are a boxing fan, it was still boredom. It wasn't exciting. It was basically, you know, you're just watching one guy trying to hit the other guy and not.
Yep. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So, you know, we might as well just move on to the NFL, or the NBA, I should say.
All righty.
As we're on, I'm getting messages from somebody and kind of knocking off my rhythm here.
Yeah, you need to get together, all right? Get together.
Yeah, I need to tighten up. That's need to get together every time we get it. But they get into the NBA game, game 7 between the Spurs and the L.A. Clippers in the Staples Center. Spectacular series is basically like what we thought, Lou. We both went ahead and predicted a 7-game series. Of course, you took the Spurs, though. I took the Clippers. And apparently it came down to like the last few seconds. Paul made a last-second shot with about a second left on the clock.
And that was
basically a wrap.
That was terrible. That was terrible defensive play leading up to that. Because you had Danny Green that was playing up on him. And I don't know why. You know, in that situation, it was like 5 seconds left on the clock. I don't know if they were in foul trouble or not, or whatever. But in a situation like that, foul him immediately. Foul Chris Paul immediately, then they'll go and have to take the ball back out again, and they'll have less time on the clock. Or if not, play off them a little bit. Because in the situation where they had it, okay, they're at half court, pretty much close to half court, you had them out there. And at the same time, the next closest guy to Danny Green was Tim Duncan at the top of the key. That's not a good situation to have your big man up that high, and immediately you're pushing up on Chris Paul and he goes right by him. And that pretty much broke down the whole defense of the Spurs, because then Duncan does not have enough time to recover, because you already automatically is just playing body to body on Chris Paul, which is going to go against his favor, because Danny Green isn't that good of a defensive player. Maybe he is at his position against certain people, but Not when you're playing against Chris Paul. And Chris Paul goes by him. Duncan can't rotate quick enough. You know, he hit a fallaway shot, but if Duncan was able to get there quicker, you would have blocked it because he was barely inches away from blocking the shot. So that play was just a mess on defense. Then coming back on the other end is what really pissed me off, is when the Spurs were getting ready to take the ball out, you know, run their play to try to win the game. And somebody at the desk thought it was a good idea. Oh, let's just run the clock out. The clock starts running. The ball doesn't even progress onto the court yet.
Huh.
I mean, that just ruined everything. So now they have to reset their whole offense again. And, you know, they tried the alley-oop play. I think D.L. threw it a little bit too high for Kawhi Leonard to get it. But that whole sequence at the end just killed me. I mean, whoever's running the score clock there, they need to fire that person.
But you know, I pretty much see, like, that's possibly true, but the reality is, though, Lou, the Spurs really had opportunities to do certain things. I feel like, why did they not foul DeAndre Jordan enough? Like, it wasn't a part of the strategy, like, they kind of eased up on it. Another thing that kind of bothered me is the fact that, why did you not play Bellinelli more and Patty Mills more? You know, loyalty to some of these players. Tony Parker obviously wasn't balling the way he normally balls, really, throughout the whole series. Ginobili's finished. Okay, can we just go ahead and put a fork in him? He's done. It's a wrap for him. Okay, and then I don't.
Give you a rap for Tim, too.
Yeah, Tim, I mean, but Tim did. When you really look at Tim's performance through this series, I think he performed well. I mean, he's 39 years old. You know, and to be quite frank, you know, I felt like he really kind of kept them in a couple of those games. He was good for at least two or three of those games, you know, that they did win. It's just the fact that everybody else really didn't step up. And every so often, I expected more from Kawhi Leonard. And he did all right, but he didn't do great. You know what I mean? And it just turned out not to be so well. You know, I think they gave them more opportunities to win and to stay alive than actually doing something, you know? But
yep.
It was a matchup. It's basically what, you know, what happened. They lost. Chris Paul basically willed them. I mean, he hurt his hamstring, came out for a little bit, and he looked impressive. So there you have it. Yep. I mean, they ended up, you know, and I also said, this, the winner out of these two, this is a phenomenal series. I thought the Clippers did well. I was coached right, and I got to give much credit to what Doc Rivers did, especially towards the last two games. J.J. Redick looked pretty good. He was revived those last two games. He did. I mean, he did well when it was in San Antonio. It was facing elimination. They came through, worked through it, got past the Spurs, and then took it to Game 7, and he came up big in that. So that was also great coaching and great decision-making. So that's typically what I saw. And like I said, this team and Golden State, I think the Clippers are going to beat Houston. And I think it's going to be the Clippers, and it's going to be Golden State. Now, the thing is what we have to really ask ourselves or question ourselves is whether Chris Paul is going to be ready. Is he going to be dealing or battling aches and pains? Does he need to take a game or two rest to get that hamstring ready? Because you need him. You can't afford to lose Chris Paul.
No, you can't afford it. Because the team goes nowhere without him.
True enough, my man.
I don't know if he's going to make the first game. I think he might not be able to make it the first game.
Yeah, I would sit him anyway because he just needs to rest. They have what, like about a two or three-day layoff before the first game? So
opinion.
When is that game one? Is it Tuesday night or is it a Wednesday? I haven't looked at the schedule.
I think it's Wednesday.
Okay, so that's good. That gives them a little bit of time. And then if you just take game one off, that'll give them to what, the Friday game, Friday night. So if I'm him, I'm the coach, I'm resting. I don't want him pressing that, pushing forward, knowing that this could be the result. You know, it could result in something bad for the team. You're going to need him moving forward. So let's see what happens. What do you take from it, Lou, in the whole series?
Yeah, the whole series, it was kind of, before the last couple of games, the whole series was basically a seesaw up and down. Like, one team showed up for one game, the other team didn't. Then the next game, the other team would show up. So it was pretty much up and down up until, like, the last couple of games. I think what the Clippers did and what Doc Rivers did, like, towards, like, the end of the quarters is that he would take DeAndre Jordan out so they couldn't, you know, try to foul him intentionally to get free throws. And that's pretty much,
yeah,
that pretty much helped their strategy. But also on top of that, you know, certain players on the Spurs pretty much didn't really get much play time, like Bellinelli. Bellinelli showed up great towards the end of game six. And in this game, he only had like two shot attempts. He only had two shot attempts. Patty Mills, you know, he barely played. Matt Bonner, who's deadly from the outside, he pretty much didn't get on the court at all.
Yeah, I quite didn't really understand some of the calls that Popovich was making. But, I mean, it's like sometimes, you know, you fight the legend behind the individual when they make, you know, a decision like that. When it comes to, you know, the fact that he has five national championships on his resume, it's almost like you feel afraid to mention the fact that, hey, you might have messed up here. Like, you probably should have did this, and, you know, he would easily say, what do we know, right? That's the first defensive answer, but then you have to ask yourself the question, like, yeah, what really did happen? Why did you? You know what I mean? Not call that.
You know,
better.
You can, yeah, they can say, they could come out and say, well, what do they know? Yeah, I won five. Yeah, but guess what? Through your whole tenure, you didn't win every single season.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you, Lou. I mean, I think he just messed up. I think he went loyalty over what, you know, the needs of actually winning.
Yep. Same thing that happened when they lost against the Heat the first time.
Yeah. They really, I think keeping Ginobili on the court cost them that series. I mean, he had like 9 turnovers in that game. and it shouldn't even have gotten to the last shot with you know, Ray Allen or LeBron James. You know, it just basically lost that series. But you know what? Throughout the tenure, what we tend to forget sometimes is that, hey, listen, the Spurs never win back-to-back championships.
No.
Never. They just never do. They always win one here, win one there, win one here, win one there. Or every other year. But, yeah, they, you know, the Clippers are a good team, and I don't want to take anything from them because they played absolutely fantastic. And I think that's a great team. I think they're the next best team, you know, outside of Golden State. And I think they have the best chance of beating Golden State out of anybody else. So we'll see in the coming weeks to kind of see what's going on with that. What do you think their chances are against Houston, and how far do you think that series is going to go?
That series, this one, it could possibly be another seven game series, at least six. Because on either end, well, you know, now I think about, what's his name? Patrick Beverly, he's injured, so he hasn't played for a while. So there goes their backcourt defense, as far as that goes. So whoever they're going to have guarding Chris Paul, that's going to be difficult for them on that sense. Now countered on the other end, they'll have an advantage because there's nobody that's going to stop James Harden from cooking them up. So either way, it's a seesaw on that end. But I think the Rockets might have more of an advantage because of what Corey Brewer and Trevor Ariza bring for that team. They're both pretty much the same size, same style of play, but they spread the floor out. Ariza's better defensively, and he's developed a 3-point shot. So their whole their defense and slashing around the basket could cause problems for them. And as far as in the middle, well, you already know Dwight's better offensively. So, but DeAndre Jordan is great at defense, but so is Dwight Howard. So. Really going by the front line is what's going to make the difference. Yeah, I think just by the front line is going to win the game out of this. I think if Houston might have the advantage in that.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that, man. I think it's going to be because listen, Houston. I got to admit, they did look impressive in their first round matchup. They did. I give them, ultimate credit, and against Dallas, they easily could have swept Dallas. I mean, Dallas made a one game push; they forced it to five. But I must say, they look pretty good. Looking good, and Howard came to life. He showed up, and if you're gonna face him at his best, that's gonna really put everybody else in a different mindset. So, Harden's gonna give his all and. Going to be, somewhat of an impressive situation if Howard puts up what he does and the rest of the team will rally. So they're going to play him tough, but I think it's going to be six games, depending on Paul. If Paul comes back in game two, I think the Clippers will win in six.
Game one is on Monday, tomorrow.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, they're not going to win that one. I don't see them winning that game unless Paul, and even if Paul, see, that's the thing. I feel you got to rest him. You can't chance him getting further injuring or damaging that hamstring. You got to give him a game to rest. But if you don't, you might cause yourself a big time situation where you don't have him for the rest of the series. So, who knows? We'll see. He might try to force his way in to get to play.
Yep.
No. Yeah. Ooh, I mean, shoot. Then we have a couple of games on today as well, too. The first Eastern Conference matchup, you had Washington, Atlanta today, and then also you had Golden State, Memphis. And when I last looked, I saw Golden State up on Memphis, 88-71. Something like that. And Lou, I mean, what was the end result? Tell me.
End result was a blowout. It was 101-86. Yeah, pretty much. Golden State pretty much, had advantage. I don't think they ever lost the lead in the game. I mean, Memphis stayed close through most of the game up until like the fourth quarter. Really, it all came down to not having Mike Conley there. Because you don't have Mike Conley there to, keep the team running efficiently down the stretch on offense. And he's pretty good on defense too, to play on Steph Curry, not on Courtney Lee. And that's who they pretty much had playing Steph Curry. So pretty much it all came down to them missing their point guard for the final stretch. But also on top of that, they didn't really play Golden State that tough. They didn't play, Grizzly type basketball. They didn't grind them out and play, that type of physical game. So that might change. They might change that up in the next round. And also, Jeff Green didn't have a decent performance showing up. He only had like 9 points, and they had him come off the bench. I figured he would start, but I guess they tried to run him, come off the bench, and that didn't really work. So we got to make some adjustments for the next round.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they make them quickly. What about the other game? What about the Washington game?
Washington and Atlanta Hawks. Washington won 104-98. You know, Bradley Beal, 28 points. Paul Pierce, 19. John Wall, 18 and 13. And it was close. That game was close, too. I mean, Hawks, they had the lead most of the game. It would seesaw back and forth. But when you really watch the game, the Wizards, you know, pretty much had an advantage. It didn't look like it. It looked like the Hawks would have the advantage, you know, because they had most of the time they had lead in the score. But John Wall was just doing whatever he want. It was like he's doing dribble drills in practice. Like he was just drive to the lane, dish it out, drive to the lane, dish it out, drive to the lane, dish it out, and they would always score. He'll drive the lane hard. He'll use his quickness to get to the lane, and as soon as he get into the lane, he'll slow down a little bit and just dish it out. He constantly kept doing it. He was just too comfortable out there. They made him felt too comfortable playing, and that just killed him towards the end. I think Bradley Beal tweaked his ankle, like, in the last quarter. He had to leave to the back. He came back, so he'll probably be okay for the next round. It might still favor him a little bit, but yeah, Atlanta has to do a lot better job defensively, especially in the middle, because John Wall, really, this game looked like, when I was watching it, it looked exactly like how, you know, Damon Stoudemire's rookie year with the Toronto Raptors, their first game in Toronto playing against the Chicago Bulls. He was just running circles around the whole team. It looked exactly like that.
Oh, man. And see, that causes, you know, it's very hard for me to even see that happen with the Atlanta team, but that seems to play good defense, for every defense, the most matchups, you know, with Horford and the way they play down low. They play a pretty good style of or good scheme of defense. So for him to just be running wild and rampant like that, you know, we always say that might be a liability because they have a better athletic point guard than John Wall. But then you look at Beal, I say to me, he's really the key. If he has an overall great series, I think Washington is going to be unstoppable with Pierce doing what he's doing, coming basically out of the depths of retirement, you know, and willing to go for that last hurrah. They're gonna you know, make a run, and they might actually be the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. I think they're definitely better than Chicago. Cleveland, without, of course, you know, they don't have Kevin Love. They don't have enough to face off against that team. And so, we could easily see the Washington Wizards in the finals facing off against either Golden State or the Clippers.
Yep.
But, you know, that's just my humble opinion. I mean, it could be wrong. You know how these things work. You have a conclusion, and then sometimes they don't quite work out the way you see it.
Yeah, but the Hawks could bounce back from this game. I mean, the situation that was going on, Pierce, John Wall, is regardless, he's going to be able to do whatever he wants. Pierce, you know, he played a decent amount of minutes, played like 31 minutes, but he's going to lay low, and he's not really going to really take effect once, like, the end of the third and fourth quarter comes. You know, that's what they brought him there for. And every time when he's playing clutch for them and hits the last shot, he's screaming to the fans, "This is what I'm here for." And also, when you have Drew Gooden, of all people, hitting 2-for-3 from three-point land, yeah, you're not going to have a chance to win.
See, Drew Gooden. Crazy. Well, I'd say
And also, Nene didn't score. Nene didn't have a good game here. He didn't score any points at all. And they still really pulled it out.
You know, he has to score. Like, he has to put up at least 10 points in order for them to do something. He has to be a better defensive presence. He has to at least seal the hole up, not let, Bill or Wall drive the ball to the basket. If you're saying that he was just dribbling everywhere and anywhere, they need to talk about it. But we know Kyle Korver is a liability on defense. He's not going to be an even match. But, he might run a couple of pick screens to get him open, facing off. But he's definitely not going to match up well when coming to that. So
really, it comes down to the bench play. That's what it comes down to. And Atlanta doesn't really have that bench compared to what the Wizards have. I mean, you have you have their backup point guard, and that's pretty much it.
Tough situation, ain't it?
Yeah. They need to figure something out because Jeff Teague isn't really physical. And, of course, Bradley Beal got the same advantage over Kyle Korver. So,
man. Like, good luck with all that, right?
Yep.
So, they've got to figure something out quick before this gets out of hand. But, we picked who we thought was going to basically win, and it just looks like it. In my opinion, going that direction, I think the two best teams obviously will be Cleveland and Washington. So they'll scratch off. And then the other one, I think it's the Clippers and Golden State. And Golden State basically nobody's stopping them. They might just take it all the way, but I think if there's any team that could stop them and that could get past them, it would be the Clippers. I mean, unless Houston, plays above their head, which I sorely doubt. So, I mean, I could be wrong, but then again, I could be wrong, right? Could be wrong, but then could
they
be wrong.
They do have a liability, and that is Josh Smith.
Smith, I think Smith is gone. Hey, that's right. He's gone for two games against the Bulls. How did I forget that? He messed up. Yeah, 100% right. I forgot that he basically
was going to be suspended
for
Smith.
Josh Smith for Houston.
Yeah.
For Houston.
Yeah.
But see, look at that. You rekindled my memory. Like, man, I just realized in that Cleveland-Chicago series, if that Bulls team that showed up against Milwaukee in Game 6, if that's the team that's going to face off against Cleveland, then I'll give them a puncher's chance of possibly doing something and getting further against Cleveland. They'll beat them, but we all know that's an anomaly and that happens just out of the sheer, you know what I mean? That's not going to be something that's happening frequently over. It's just not going to happen. And we've seen it, and we bear witness to it, so I don't think that's going to happen. I think LeBron is going to step it up, Kyrie's going to step it up, and the Bulls might get it to like 6 games, but they'll lose that series. I'd be very surprised if they do anything past that. But then as far as the Rockets go, they're going to play a good series. I got to say 6 or 7. I picked 6 games for the Clippers. But Lou, injury, if Paul is not healthy, it's going to be 7 and they could lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't lie. That's what I believe is going to happen then. Yeah, could be wrong, but I doubt it.
Yeah, it's all going to matter on their matchup. Like, who are they going to have on their team to play the defensive assignment through the whole series against James Harden?
Yeah.
I mean, the only guy they can have, especially height-wise and, physical and, you know, good defensively is Matt Barnes. But then you're taking Matt Barnes from small forward and putting him over to guard a shooting guard, then who are you going to have, you know, to stop Trevor Ariza and Corey Brewer with their quickness? Not Glenn Davis.
Not yet. Not Glenn Davis. He's definitely not going to be that. But then again, it's not. Trying to have a bit of hopefulness and for what we think could happen, but it's just not the reality.
They're starting five. Okay, the Clippers starting five, Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, Barnes, Griffin, and Jordan. Their bench, they don't really play anybody off the bench. You got Crawford there. Then you have Glenn Davis. Then you have Rivers. And who else? They don't play nobody else. They don't play Turkoglu. They brought in, you know, Dante Jones. Dante Jones don't even play. So maybe they'll bring him in for this series to help defensively because he does have good defense. But not enough to stop James Harden. They just don't have the depth.
That's why if Paul is in there, it'll be even, because at times we know that Harden struggles with defense, especially against a Chris Paul. And Paul is a distributor. He's going to find the open hole. And then when he's there, they just play different. Blake Griffin also looked impressive through that series. I think there's not going to be an answer for him. And we know both that Dwight Howard can't handle DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin plays a little bit too far from the basket. Even though, you know, Howard is a great defender, he can't be in two places at once. Not like that yet. He's going to need some help from everybody else on the team. It's going to be a good matchup. But I definitely see Clippers coming out of there. Unless, of course, the injuries ruin it. And that's what it seems to be. But, I mean, Paul came back. He finished off, but that was like a last-ditch effort on the brink of elimination, and he had to. Now, will it be the same? See? So, crazy.
Well, I know one thing we won't see. We won't see any intentional – in that series, we won't see any intentional hacking, you know, to get an advantage off free throws, because neither one of the big men can shoot free throws.
I think Howard's a little bit better, though. So it's like they just got to play the game back the same. Like if they pull it, they got to do the same thing, you know. But in what unlikely how it might be out of – well, I doubt it. I think they kept him in the game a little bit in the first series against Dallas. So they might keep him again. Howard's with like a 60% free throw shooter. And DeAndre Jordan's is like right now he's at 30-some percent. So it's ridiculous. Only 3.5 shots out of 10, and it's the free throw. That's the highest grade of unacceptable. But we'll see. I mean, early on, he's great because he basically plays a big defensive presence. And if he has ever hit his free throws, I mean, at least just 60% of those, they'd be unstoppable. You couldn't stop him, but he's not going to do that, so I'm not going to have wishful thinking.
And also when you talk about free throws, this is where I'd say they don't have no one to stop James Harden, because that's what James Harden wants to do. He'll destroy you outside, and he'll take you off the dribble, go into the lane, and he doesn't care about contact because he wants to go to the free throw line and hit those shots. I think he was leading the league in, like, free throw attempts.
Yeah, he did. But I say, well, Paul is equally as dangerous in the same effect, because he's a 90% free throw shooter when he gets to the line. So I think they're both going to play that kind of game, that kind of strategy. I think you want Harden to go ahead and take that little step back nudge and kind of fade away jumper. That's like one of the best moves since Jordan. You know, that little step in, step out, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really a fadeaway, but it's almost like, you know, like a touch shot dropping backwards. That's the best shot since Michael Jordan's turn to fade away that I've seen. So that's what I say. Anything last thing we can add before we get out of here, Lou? Are we up against the clock? What do you say, my man?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it really wasn't much, of course. The fight really took up everything. I'm not going to even give Kentucky Derby results because basically that's almost like an event where people go just to gamble. Nobody cares about the horses. It's just basically if you want a million or not. You know what I mean? So big time event for that. But outside of that, as we saw, we basically were witness to, once again, a game that was or a match that was really dependent on defense and strategy, and obviously that wins over compassion and people that you root for. And I had that discussion with various people today, you know, how you feel versus what is actually a reality. Sometimes your feelings are not enough. You have to make things happen. You have to cause things to erupt, and then you get a better result out of life. And in situations where everything is determined on how you react. So that's basically what happened in that fight. Mayweather had his fight. He played defensive, forced everybody, Pacquiao to adjust to him, and there you go. He had a result. So with that said,
yep.
Lou, once again, Lou Matic. I'm your host, Marlon, and I think I got my name, but I'll go ahead and release that on Thursday night when we're back on the air. Y'all enjoy it. Rest of this weekend, Sunday night before you go, Game of Thrones, whatever your fix is, check that out. And with that said, we'll leave you with beautiful music as always. Peace.